Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, and you really have the real words of the people who are speaking to you here. Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Good day.
Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist, professor at the University of Albany.
Good morning.
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We were just sitting here just before the microphone went on talking about this op-ed in the New York Times with the byline of Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I say what you're going to hear here is really our words is that we don't have anybody writing op-eds for us, right?
Nobody
writes for you. Nobody writes for you, Alan. Nobody would do that.
Everybody writes op-eds for you. Everybody writes op-eds for us. Some people may mistake your humor for something, the truth. And what it is that a lot of people do. But here is the Putin people, the machine, obviously taking advantage of the opportunity to do this. I don't know that Obama writes op-eds in the
Obama should have written this one. Wait a minute. I think that we need to like suspend our suspicions here. And I had the suspicions when I read it. Like his English is awfully good for one thing.
And he's a dictator.
However, that he put that message in a leading American newspaper means something. It was written what I want the American people to know. Our countries don't communicate. We're facing a terrible situation. Let's deal with it in a different way. That's a great message.
And what makes you people, basically, this is the parenthesis, American exceptionalism, have the power to go into another country and have your will done, which is a question that a lot of people in America have been asking.
Well, of course, if the media in the in Russia would publish material like that from the United States, I think that it might say, what makes you people think that it's all right to support a regime that murders its citizens with poison gas, right?
Well,
which is exactly what the Russian regime is doing. So let's not lionize Vladimir Putin interest of supporting our left-wing preference against war.
I'm serious.
I just think we need to be balanced
here. Sound very angry, Rex. I just want to point out, I don't think either Rosemary or I were lionizing Putin. In fact, I went out of my way to say that he was a dictator. And dictators have an easier way with their newspapers. And
they do.
Correct. Yeah. But Rex, you've also pointed out what might be a good PR move by our president, which is to say, thank you, President. And here's a message I have for your people. And to do the same thing.
That would be
so
cool.
I am extolling the idea that there's a line of communication open that was not there before. We have not heard from Vladimir Putin in our newspapers before.
I'd like to know who the PR firm is that wrote that for him. I'd like to know who the... In fact, I think that would be incumbent upon the opinion page editor of the New York Times to reveal who sent this to us, who was the contact point.
However, the convention is that we don't require these op-eds to be written by themselves. When Governor Cuomo puts one in your paper, do you think he did that himself?
Exactly. That was exactly why I brought this up at the very beginning. We are really the people behind this. The three of us sitting here are using our own words. We published an op-ed piece with the byline of Jerry Jennings, the mayor of Albany, talking about the finances. We had published a column by Richard Brodsky, former assemblyman who now writes a weekly column in the Times Union, criticizing Albany finances. There was a response by Mayor Jerry Jennings. I know that Jerry Jennings didn't write that. I know that was written by Phil Calderon, the deputy mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pretty sure. I'm virtually positive. But, you know, we do ally ourselves with that myth that public officials write things.
It doesn't matter if they wrote it. We think our presidents write the speeches they give.
I was going to say, Rosemary.
We have accepted ghostwriting. What's important here is that Vladimir Putin's name is on it. He has endorsed the sentiments of that letter, which say, let's strengthen the UN and do this right instead of one country or another going in.
If I may be permitted, just say one little thing.
Okay, I'll be quiet.
No. Just one little thing, and that is the last American president who probably wrote every word of a speech was probably Abraham Lincoln on the train.
Exactly.
On the way to Gettysburg.
Interesting. By the way, the Syrian crisis has prompted a spike in traffic for some non-native, non-American websites. For example, TheGuardian.com has seen traffic rise very quickly. And, of course, the third largest, let me see if I get this right, the third largest website for news in the United States is the Daily Mail, a British newspaper. The Daily Mail has been very aggressive in search engine marketing and SEO, and there is a great deal of traffic. And, of course, a lot of that is not serious news. The Guardian, at least, is really doing significant
news. But also the left-wing place to go.
It is.
Yes,
yep.
The Guardian. So if you want, let the record show that Rosemary just slumped
again,
her shoulders to indicate she was very unhappy with what I said.
With both of you, we're all about suspicious,
both
all about
men.
Marketing.
Well, that's
the
good
truth
thing
is,
for journalists, isn't it?
Yeah, but you have to be a little bit open-minded here. Let's look at the other thing. Both of these papers that are seeing spikes, The Mail and The Guardian, have fantastic Middle Eastern sources, far better than our own newspapers. And that should be a criticism that we look at of ourselves, not just like, oh, they're just marketing better.
I got to take a class with you, Rosemary. You know, you say you are one of the best journalism professors in the country, and you are. And your insights are terrific.
I can't disagree with that.
I don't know, by the way, that we necessarily know that The Guardian has better Middle Eastern sources than The New York Times. I don't know that to be true. But
I don't know a lot of things.
Yeah, right.
But Rosemary said what
stop
she did
from
know.
Saying him, right?
Yeah. But Rosemary said what she did know, and that was why I respect her so much.
What is it, by the way, that leads us to have an analysis of everything? For example, the general analysis immediately after the president's speech on Syria was, the speech was not good. It was not consequential.
No.
It was not a very good thing.
Don't get me started.
The spin is going on. Why is that, Alan? What do you think?
Well, you have these sort of academic-type, think-tank-type guys. God knows who gives them their money and who they report to and all the rest of them. And they came out after the speech, some of these foreign journals, and with respected names, and said, we don't like Obama's speech. It wasn't definitive enough. He should have gone in harder. He should have done this and he should have done that. Well, you know, I've served 40 years in the trenches of the academy, and I have to tell you that, you know, sometimes professors are either dumb or stupid or mean-spirited.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes speak, off the top of their heads, and sometimes represent the views of clients. That's as far as I'm going.
Did we hear an example of that from NPR reporting recently?
What was that?
Elizabeth, I'm sorry, how is her last name?
Obagi,
who has been cited as a great expert on Syria.
Right. Turns out.
Was on the payroll.
On the pad.
Of an organization that advocates precisely for the rebels in Syria.
And she got by her think tank. But they didn't say it was for her opinion. It was that she said that she had a doctorate when she did.
She led people to believe that she had a doctorate. She didn't correct them, it sounds like. For example, John McCain in Senate committee hearing referred to her.
As doctor.
And I guess that's not.
You may refer to me as doctor.
This gives me a chance
and I'll
to get
show
back
you
at
the
your
degree.
Dig about sources at the New York Times. The Obagi story is so reminiscent of Judy Miller, who was the reporter who led us through the New York Times into war in Iraq. Yeah, there's weapons of mass destruction. And the problem, of course, with that is sources were very suspicious and connected.
I'm just saying, I don't think you know about the New York Times reporting now. You're citing something from, what was that? What year was that? 2001. 2003, right. And so 10 years later, for you to still be citing Judith Miller, which I agree is an egregious example of bad reporting, of reporting that didn't do any better, I should say, than the American government.
Right. And again, it's the American government this time that it seems to have been taken in by Elizabeth Bagley. It was John Kerry and John McCain who have been citing her in public.
I think the media... I think it's
also,
the media.
That's right. They're saying, read her article. It's very interesting.
But Rex, the phone was ringing in the other room. It was the New York Times. They wanted you to come in and interview for the editorship.
I'm just saying that I think we should be careful not to overstate what we know here.
Yeah.
And I don't know that The Guardian is better than The Times. I mean, it's true that the American media don't have as many foreign bureaus as they used to have.
Right.
It's true that American television, I think, lacks, most American channels lack the broader perspective that, for example, Al Jazeera is able to bring. Al Jazeera America now is here, and you see the right wing reacting with an attack on the very idea that, oh my goodness, we're going to have media that doesn't have American exceptionalism at its core. So, I mean, I certainly agree with that.
They bend over backwards. And because of that, have better relationships in the Middle East. Al Jazeera and The Guardian both.
Well, you know, it does turn out that the emir from Qatar.
Gutter is actually how you.
Gutter?
That's how we say it in the U.S.
In the gutter?
The rest of the world, gutter. It's Qatar.
Really?
Qatar, yeah.
It's really interesting. I don't know why.
Well, maybe because it's a form of prejudice. But in any case, you know, like you're in the gutter. But, you know, I think that there is something to be said about being very careful about a news organization who reports to a political leader. And in this case, so I would take some exception to the idea that somehow this is an upfront organization, because we do know that there have been occasions where we are told he calls in the plays.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, well, you both don't know enough.
We've been told. So Alan will cite his source next week on that. Anyway, the point that I wanted to bring up was that with regard to the Sirius speech, one of the ways that the White House is fighting back to this analysis was through social media. And that signifies the importance that social media has taken on, because, of course, reporters all track religiously what's coming off in Twitter and what's going on in other social media. And so if you are a smart political press secretary, you're on top of social media when you're trying to get your message out.
And that's why the story this week, a numbers story on Miley Cyrus, was so horrifying to me. They were relying on Twitter and on social media, and it turns out that Americans were not just a little more interested in Miley, 12 times more interested in Miley Cyrus than Syria.
What is that move called?
Twerking.
Twerking.
Oh, yeah, twerking.
Which term? Did you know that term?
I had to look it up.
I did too.
I looked it up too.
I did too, yeah. Which maybe just shows that we're a little older than
I must say, can I ask both of you, do you tweet?
Yeah.
Yes. Not a lot.
Not as much as I should.
Does it help a newspaper if its editor tweets?
Well, indirectly, yes, I think so. In part for two reasons. First, you're pushing your content out there through different platforms for people who otherwise wouldn't see it, because they may not tune into your...
They may not ever read a newspaper.
...home website, or they might not pick up your print product. But second, you're building brand. And we believe that going forward, the individual brands of journalists are going to be increasingly important. People are going to be buying into that kind of thing. The same way they did with columnists like Jimmy Breslin sold the New York Daily News when he was the most popular columnist.
There's an interesting story on the topic of bundling, which we haven't come to, how to best sell news in this day and age. And the example was a story that ran in the New York Times from Target. And what it was doing, we know this, is figuring out what its customers wanted so it could sell them more effectively, more stuff. And the headline on their story was, how stores find out about you. And this was picked up by the online people who re-tagged it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, how Target found out that a 14-year-old girl was pregnant before her father did. Same exact story. Guess which one had more hits?
Right.
So it's not just whether you tweet or use social media. It's how adept you are at using it. And too many of us old print people have not been very adept at it.
We have actually had training sessions of how to write headlines for social media and how to write headlines for the web. We work on that kind of thing.
So give us an example of what you might want to do.
Well, actually, for social media, one of the things is you have to be much more specific to what might be grabbed by web crawlers, so that in print we will often find an evocative headline, something that has a sort of feel to it, and that's nice on the printed page because people right below it will see a very specific subhead, and they'll figure out what the story is about. But in digital, you have to be very specific and say, this is a story about Miley Cyrus and what she did at the Video Music Awards, rather than saying, oh my Miley. That wouldn't be good enough.
And you have to do it fast. So in other words, you only get, 140 characters? Is that something like that?
That's in tweeting.
In Twitter, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I did one this morning. I'm trying to learn at my age.
I have to follow
at
you.
My age, yes. And I
excellent.
And, yeah, and there's something new on the web called clout. Do you know about clout?
Clout.
Yeah, it's not new. It's a way to measure your impact.
Whether you're important or not.
Oh, yes.
My boy got me into it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, one of the ways you...
My boy being
Jonas,
your 40-year-old son. 38 right?
years old. And somehow he's always more important on it, has a higher score than I do.
He has a higher social media profile than you do.
That's right, because more you tweet, the more you put stuff out there, the more times your name is mentioned, the more friends you have who are following you, the higher your clout score is. I finally gave up and got rid of it because I was so, so unhappy about being so far behind.
Couldn't stand it.
But Ellen's the more clout. Tweeting, but the more tweeting you do, obviously, and the more I said, "Well, I'm on the air all the time. What is this? Why am I more important?"
Ashton Kutcher has more than a million. He reached a million. He was the first one to reach a million. Ashton Kutcher, who has. So much to say. That's the sort of thing. He has an amazing clout score.
Oh, dear.
So keep that in mind. So again, 12 times more interested in Miley Cyrus. They read 2.4 Syria.
Then, yeah, in Syria.
The point is that the media put out more than two times as much, 2.5 times
right,
more articles about Syria
saying.
Than about Miley Cyrus, which, by the way, is not a very big percentage difference. I mean, I'm surprised that it wasn't 5 times Syria. Maybe when this measure was taken, it was low. I'm surprised Syria wasn't even more than Miley Cyrus, but maybe it was at the immediate aftermath of the Miley Cyrus
thing. The time limit is what did it, because we've been writing about Syria for 2 years or more.
Right.
What's the time limit? I'm sorry. Help us
all
out here.
I'm just saying that here we are. It's talking about the 3 days surrounding Miley Cyrus's VMA performance and the Obama administration signaling its willingness to bomb Syria. In that little 3-day period, there were 2.4 times more articles in the media surveyed about Syria than about Miley Cyrus, but she got 12 times the amount of traffic.
Maybe there was some confusion. I mean, think about this. Syria and Cyrus. Syria and Cyrus.
Maybe they're looking for Cyprus, right? They're concerned about the Cypriot problem.
I would just like to say that this is further proof that problems with the media are not all the media's fault. It's our readers and listeners.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is the same thing that goes on in America all the time. How come our kids aren't learning at the rate we'd like to? Well, the colleges say it's the high school's fault. The high school says junior high school's fault. The junior high schools say it's the kindergarten's fault. The kindergarten people say not enough pre-kindergarten, and everybody's pointing at everybody else. But, you know, is that...
And that's about right.
Is that really helpful?
They all play a part in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to figure out what the problems are before you can go solving them.
There you go. And you have a PhD, so you should know that, Alan.
I have a PhD and 3 honorary PhDs.
Well, there's no such thing. You have an honorary doctorate, not an honorary PhD.
Who told you that?
Straight.
Well, there's an intelligent answer if I ever heard one. The Bronx cheer comes up again.
How does one spell that?
This is the Media Project.
B-H-H-H-H-H-H-W-A-M-C.
Alan Shartok of WAMC, Rosemary Romeo from the University of Albany, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Sorry, I don't know how we translate that. I learned that. That's South Dakota. That's where we learned to speak that. By the way, the big news here in upstate New York or in New York media circles this past week has been that Politico, the online site that has been so successful in Washington in becoming the go-to place for information about federal politics and government, Politico has now invested and bought an online site called Capital New York that has been around for a few years.
And what is that Capital New York thing?
Well, they have only 7 employees right now, but they have been putting out about a monthly tabloid and a digital site. It's created by a couple of former New York Observer editors. And now Capital New York is going to become an affiliate of Politico, and Politico says they're going to hire 12 journalists to report on politics and media.
In New York City.
New York City and New York State. They say they're going to bring a half dozen more reporters up to Albany to cover New York State politics and government. So
but now you have a terrific staff at the Times Union in Albany here.
And well, it does now before the hiring.
Well, and they report.
before they all get hired away by Politico.
And they report, you know, they break news all the time. Do you feel somewhat challenged by the fact that these people are moving in on you?
Indeed, I do. I think that every media outlet, I think the New York Times should feel challenged as well. You know, the experience of Politico is it was created by two former Washington Post reporters, and immediately they started picking people off. In fact, the key place that Washington policymakers go for information is the morning newsletter put out by Mike Allen, a.k.a. Mikey, in Washington. And Mike Allen used to be a Washington Post reporter. He is now one of the key faces of Politico. And if you want to know what's going on in Washington, you must read Politico. So, we're at risk if people find that that's the case for here in Albany.
So there's Liz Benjamin, who has a blog, and she used to work for you, and mm-hmm. then she went to the Daily News, and now she works for this cable outfit, YNN, and does a wonderful blog, is sort of regarded as must-read, also along with your Jimmy Fieldkind in the Times Union. Mm-hmm. And so here you pay these people a certain amount, and people with unlimited pocketbooks could come along and double their salaries and take them and rob them.
I don't think anybody has unlimited pocketbooks. It is an interesting question, and part of it is, do people want to work for a so-called pure play, which is a digital entity, or do they want to have the greater range that I think a multiple platform entity like the Times Union can provide?
To what end? So that more people would know them and respect them, you mean, than otherwise?
It depends. People like to have the range of content choices. It's a more interesting venue.
What was the name of the game? What was
this
the name?
Is
of
all...
What was the name of the movie where the guy kept saying, "Show me the money,
show me the money, show me the money"?
This is all good news for readers and listeners,
it
though,
is.
Because it means there's more competition, more stories will get out, more high speed and competitive stories.
Every time one of Rex's editors calls me, business editors, and says, "There's another public radio station, another radio station that is opening up somewhere in your vast listening area. And how do you feel about that, Ms. Shartok?" And I always say, "Let a thousand flowers bloom." Because frankly, I may not like it, but it's the only thing you can say. You can say, "How dare they come in and
we'll crush them and drink the blood of their children." Yes, that, you cannot say that.
What PR firm wrote that line for you, Alan?
I think it was Chairman Mao,
to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's quite a reversal of even just a few years ago when Columbia Journalism Review began tracking coverage in state houses and found it sadly lacking and declining as newspapers especially were cutting back. So
which is why
this is a good thing.
Which is why I truly believe that even though they say they're going to cover both New York State, where I publish a newspaper, by the way, I don't want to forget it, called the Legislative Gazette. It's a training ground for young students. And Rosemary sends me wonderful people, and sometimes you even hire them, Rex.
I'm sending them all to Politico now, though.
Yeah. Right, right. But I have to say, that's not funny, but I have to...
We'll see, by the way, they have the... You said, they pay unlimited salaries. I don't know what the business model for this is. I'm not so sure that they really have a sense of how many people are going to... They say they may charge $1,000 a year for access to this information. We'll see how many people are willing to pay that. Right.
Oh, I see. So in other words, there's going to be a paywall.
It's a paywall, and the notion
is
that they're lobbyists.
It's like a newsletter model more,
yeah, more or less
it?
A newsletter mm-hmm. model. We'll see.
Well, I have something to add to that. WAMC at one point, before the internet really took off and you could listen to the legislature anytime you want to, parenthesis, who would want to, and because it's boring and because they don't really do anything on the floor, they just show off. So we had these boxes, dedicated signals, which we rented to anybody who wanted to hear them real time. And guess what? Very few people did. Yeah, there were some lobbyists and some others, but very few people did.
I see, because in the press corps, those boxes were provided by the legislature.
Yeah,
because
we weren't renting those from you. You were in the same building.
We were in the building, yes.
Yes,
right.
But if you were up on Washington Avenue, or if you were over in out in the suburbs, out in...
Colony.
Colony, yeah. Then you would want one of those boxes, but now you can do it all on the internet. So it's just that I was trying to respond to what you said, which was that you're right, there's a limited number of people who want this stuff.
Final topic. CNN now has more opinion content in its evenings rather than straight news. The opinion content in the evening is 66% on CNN, 56% on Fox News, 86% on MSNBC. What do we think? Rosemary?
Well, I'm just shaking my head. Just what we needed, more opinion from this group.
I don't think you're right.
Yeah, yelling and screaming. And how come everybody I meet goes, "Oh, you people just should report the facts and don't give sure opinion." And what the model is showing, the business model is showing, that people actually are turning into opinion and rude, yelling back and forth.
They go where they're welcome.
What?
You know that. Wow. So they go to MSNBC
and you're left. They pick the opinion that they're interested in. I don't know. I don't think it's a good thing. Alan, it even makes me wonder about the round table. You know, a bunch of people in New York giving their opinion about things. Why is that interesting?
Uh-oh, we got to go. Time's up. No more time.
Or the Media Project.
We'll come back next week and we'll have this argument finished.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.